This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 on this rather foggy, gloomy Wednesday morning, the 23rd of November. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Chong Jian San. Meanwhile, though, we're taking a look at what's happening over at the Disney Empire. They saw a sudden change of leadership on Sunday when the board announced that Bob Chapek was stepping down as CEO to be replaced by his predecessor, Bob Iger.
Bob Chapek's tenure was marked by 33 months of crisis management, starting with the pandemic lockdowns that shuttered Disney parks in 2020 and culminating with the culture wars in Florida earlier this year that cost Disney its favoured nation status in the state. A clear signal of souring investor confidence is the plunge in Disney stock, which dipped nearly 40% on a year prior to the leadership change.
So the old Bob, Bob Iger, will take over the company as it seeks to staunch billions of dollars in losses in its streaming business. And although Disney Plus reported an increase in subscriber numbers in the third quarter, the segment was operating at a loss of $1.5 billion. So can Bob Iger bring back magic for Disney investors?
For more analysis on this, we speak to Geeta Ranganathan, analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Geeta, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Now, the firing of Bob Chapek did seem to come out of the blue. Why did investors lose confidence in him? What were the missteps he made in his tenure that led to his sacking?
So, you know, in all fairness to Bob Chapek, we do have to remember that he did take over the CEO position at Disney at a very, very difficult time. He became CEO in February 2020. That's exactly when, like, COVID was striking. The theme parks were going to have to be shut down. And he kind of, at that point, he was the perfect man for the job, kind of given his experience leading that division. Unfortunately, what happened is after he took over as CEO, he kind of ran into multiple internal and external, you know, mishaps and missteps. That included a host of different things. So there were some public relations mistakes. There was, you know, political controversy that he faced in the state of Florida. He was not really able to kind of get along well with, you know, Hollywood talent. You might remember the big lawsuit that came from Scarlett Johansson with the Black Widow movie release. And there were just many, many unpopular business decisions that didn't work in his favor. He also really wasn't able to kind of build that rapport with his employees, the rank and file. But I think most importantly, and this was probably the last straw which kind of led to his ouster, was Disney's fiscal fourth quarter earnings, where, you know, they basically not just delivered very poor earnings, but also an equally bleak outlook for 2023, which kind of really, I think, raised a red flag and pushed the board to replace him.
And Geeta, how did Disney's board manage to keep secret Bob Chapek's sacking and rehiring of Bob Iger?
That's a great question. And, you know, that was something I was wondering the whole day yesterday. I was kind of thinking about this and it was really a bolt from the blue. I mean, yes, we realized there were obviously problems, but, you know, I think there just came a point when they felt like something radical needed to be done. And, you know, I guess the best man for the job at that point was you know, the leader who had already led the company for such a long time. And so they went back to Bob Iger.
Geeta, can you help us recap Bob Iger's legacy at Disney before his departure in 2020?
Yeah, so Bob Iger worked at Disney actually for 40 years, of which he was CEO for about 15. I think what really defined his legacy was that he built up this company through a series of acquisitions, right? So if you just kind of look at the year that he was named CEO, which was, back in 2005, Disney's net income was about $2.5 billion. By the time he left, it was up 300% to almost $10.5 billion. And a lot of this was because of the M&A that he kind of engaged in. So he bought three huge, film studios. Pixar was in 2007. That was followed by Marvel and then Lucasfilm with, you know, the Star Wars properties. But the really biggest deal, I think the most defining deal of his career was a $71 billion deal for majority of the assets of Fox. And once he did that, he felt like he was then finally equipped to go out and launch the Disney Plus streaming service. And so in many ways, I think he was the architect for the launch of the Disney Plus streaming service. And that might have been, you know, his most defining moment, I think, in his career, just kind of given the success of that product.
So now that he's back for a second time round, what are the challenges for Iger to turn around Disney's fortunes?
So obviously there's a lot to do. There's also a lot for him to undo. And we already saw him kind of do that with, you know, he kind of undid one of the organizational rejiggering that Bob Chapek had done. But I think more importantly, he really needs to kind of articulate the strategy to get to profitability, right, on the streaming side. But obviously Disney has other assets as well. So ESPN, which is by far the largest sports property in the world, is a very, very big challenge for Disney because it is losing subscribers. It still generates a lot of profits, almost $4.5 billion every year. But their revenue, their top line is being challenged a lot because subscribers are leaving. They're going to, you know, streaming platforms. So they have to kind of figure out a way about, you know, how they proceed with ESPN. It's a very tricky situation. It's a very careful balancing act. And so they need to think about this very carefully and execute it flawlessly. And the other big issue at hand is what they want to do with Hulu. So Disney has different streaming platforms. They obviously have Disney Plus, they have ESPN Plus, but they also have Hulu, but they don't completely own Hulu. So one third of Hulu is owned by Comcast. And, you know, there is this ongoing discussion about when they kind of go ahead and purchase the rest of Hulu from Comcast. So that's something that Bob Iger will need to think of as well. But I think the biggest challenge, of course, he has all of these different, you know, assets, different operational challenges, but I think the biggest challenge for him really, and something where he has not been very successful in the past, is going to be succession, finding somebody who can lead Disney after he leaves in 2 years. And that probably will constantly be, top of mind agenda item for him.
And looking more broadly at the streaming industry overall, what are the major headwinds affecting the outlook of the sector? Which players are in a particularly precarious position?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think generally what we've seen is that, you know, this whole idea of being able to keep getting subscribers, quarter in and quarter out. I mean, first of all, we're seeing a lot of lumpiness, but I think more importantly, we're seeing subscription fatigue, right? There's only so many number of streaming services that any given consumer wants to subscribe to. So there is always the chance that they might cancel, a few of the services. The other big factor going into 2023 is going to be, you know, just the general challenging macro environment and the fact that people are really kind of going to pull back on their spending. They're going to pull back on their budgets. And the biggest issue really for all of these streamers is soaring content costs. So Bloomberg Intelligence estimates that all of these media companies are going to spend collectively about $160 billion on content in 2023. That is an absolutely massive number. And it's only going to keep growing because, you know, content costs, there's a lot of inflation there. Sports rights, those are very costly. So they just have, you know, they just have a really, really difficult road ahead of them. In terms of who is in a precarious position, I think any player who is subscale is going to be in trouble. So if you just kind of look at, you know, possible winners and losers, we think Disney and Netflix and even probably Amazon Prime will definitely win the subscriber race. They, you know, they might each have about 250 to 300 million streamers. But there's going to be a handful of other services. You know, it could be a Peacock, it could be a Paramount Plus, which may really struggle to kind of attract that critical mass. So at some point, I mean, there is going to be a capitulation, right? Somebody has to throw in the towel where they either just exit the market or they kind of get acquired or fold into another existing service. So it's really going to be a game of scale, whichever way you look at it.
Geeta, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Geeta Ranganathan, analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence, giving us a rundown of what's happening over at Disney, as well as the broader sector outlook for streaming players and just the very competitive landscape that they are going through.
Yeah, I think we were discussing this yesterday, and Iger's failure to walk away from Disney is a classic business school case study on how not to pass the baton. And it just has some Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien vibes in it. But the specifics that led to Iger replacing his handpicked successor are filled with missteps, deceit and awkwardness. And I think the Disney board extended Chapek's contract for 3 more years on June 28. But less than 5 months later, the board has decided to let him go. And because of this, the company has to pay, if I'm not wrong, I read about $54 million in severance pay to Chapek.
So who's culpable? Isn't it the board at the end of the day? Because they hired Chapek, right? And they just renewed his contract. But you know who's the winner in all this when it comes to streaming wars? Us.
Ah, because we've got so many options.
Yes, and there's no need to be loyal anymore. Unlike cable, you can just switch. Easy peasy. So there are some advantages to having a lot of streaming services.
7:47 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, how do we combat social media disinformation and other misleading narratives in our polarized times? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.